park goes.
Well, you know, it's really the wrong time of year for Washington. The weather is all wrong, so I don't think I could really fit it into my schedule at this time.
But going to Washington?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a poor person. I couldn't afford plane fare to Washington.
Well, I was thinking possibly we could hitchhike. But then again, that might be construed as crossing state lines without an automobile. Well, in any case, that's interesting that there's a series of different tactics being used by the FCC.
Yeah, they're trying, yeah, like you say, different tactics around the country. Now, you guys may get a notice of apparent liability just saying that you're being fined, or they may try the San Marcos, Texas tactic on you. By
Any hearings coming up? I know Berkeley has sort of a...
And that was, we were listening to Richard Edmondson of San Francisco Liberation Radio discussing our problems here in Santa Cruz and his problems up in San Francisco. But all in all, Free Radio is doing pretty well. And in fact, on the line with me now, I have a man who's calling from across the country concerned about Free Radio Santa Cruz. Free Radio Santa Cruz's own V-Man. Hi, Vinny.
Hi there, everybody in Santa Cruz.
Hey.
And to all those FCC agents listening. You can tune into my show tomorrow night on West Philly Pirate Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And other than that, I just wanted to have a few comments about specifically the FCC and what I think is a bunch of scare tactics that they're using across the nation against all kinds of pirate radio stations.
And we should say you're calling long distance from Philadelphia, right?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Philly, the FCC has been active as well against Radio Mutiny, which, of course, is continuing to broadcast every night except Saturday from 6 to midnight. And they're not bowing to the pressure. And I'm glad to hear that Free Radio Santa Cruz also stayed on the air through the so-called crisis with the visit yesterday. And I basically just want to let the FCC know that the pirate radio stations, specifically Free Radio Santa Cruz and Radio Mutiny, are not backing down to these kind of scare tactics. We're staying on the air. And we're going to continue to broadcast to the public, you know, items and issues and news that doesn't get any coverage in the mainstream media. So, and I personally believe that this whole thing is being fostered by the National Association of Broadcasters, and that probably goes without saying. But they have a vested financial interest in stopping the pirate radio movement. So, to them, I also would like to say, fuck you, we're not backing down, we're going to stay on the air. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say.
Well said, Vinny.
And, again, I just want to stress that for people that are, going to do their shows, keep the doors locked. And, ask for a warrant, ask for an ID if they come, and don't let them in, because they have no right to inspect our station.
Mm-hmm. Keep the doors locked and your minds open, or the airwaves open,
exactly.
I should say.
Exactly, keep the airwaves free.
All right. Thanks, Vinny.
All right, I'll talk to you more.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And, of course, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, in the closing minutes of Bathurst Pierce Broadside Sunday show. In the studio with us, we have who has returned for a brief discussion at my request. We have Roxanne Akistapache. We have the ever and inevitable David Silva, City Council candidate, Green Party activist, committee to repeal the sleeping ban stalwart. And, of course, we have Alicia Akistapache, who will be giving us much, much more of her time during Reckless' show, which is soon to follow at 1:30. Before we get into that, though, I want to point out that yesterday, in the tradition of Gandhi, Gandhi's grandson appeared at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, a local peace group, which was co-founded by Councilmember Scott Kennedy. I wrote a flyer about this, which read as follows. Guns in the Resource Center, informant networks in Lower Ocean, dawn to dusk curfews at the river, 6 months jail for begging twice after dark, in the tradition of Gandhi? What are Scott Kennedy and Eric Larson doing to the Resource Center for Nonviolence? Can two politicians transform a vital spiritual community resource into another arm of the police? Should the Resource Center for Nonviolence endorse the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban so homeless people may sleep and cover up with blankets without fear of arrest? What does your conscience tell you? David was unfortunately foisted with this flyer as he was trying to maintain a diplomatic profile at the session. You actually spent some hours listening to Gandhi's grandson speak and hearing the Resource Center for Nonviolence's concerns. Their recent concerns, of course, about the Department of Justice COPS grant, which will allow the Santa Cruz Police Department to set the agenda for a resource center for nonviolent staffer to deal with so-called gang problems in the south of Laurel area. What do you two think of all this? Roxanne, David Silva, why don't you talk about this?
Well, the entire meeting, of course, was not dedicated to that. There was Arun Gandhi, grandson to Mahatma Gandhi, both in blood and in spirit. And there was Mr. Kapoor from Fresno State, who set up the Gandhi Center there, who I know from Fresno. And I keep on saying David Dillinger, but it wasn't David Dillinger. Another one of the Davids, who went to Kosovo and talked about how they've managed to make the uprising in Kosovo a nonviolent resistance. So there was a lot of discussion, but once it opened up to questions from the audience, and there was like a double circle inside the upstairs room there at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, it was quite apparent that most of the steering committee, most of the people there, were very, very concerned with making alliances with the police department. And Eric Larson actually opened up that question by asking from advice from the speakers on what they thought about making alliances with the police department, and they agreed, of course, communication is always very important. But Arun Gandhi was very, very clear. Arun Gandhi said that the police operate a completely different dynamic than a nonviolent center. A nonviolent center has a dynamic that is about truth, and the police have a dynamic of controlling people through fear, and that we can't in any way ever make agreements with them that enhances that that control of people through fear. And that was quite a slap in the face to Eric Larson. I don't think he was quite expecting that. But maybe it was a slap in the face that woke him up. It seemed to be a slap in the face that woke Kennedy up somewhat. And it certainly did give a big rush of comments from all the people participating. It seems that the Resource Center, everyone except Eric Larson and Scott Kennedy, is pretty upset about what the implications are of Fink squads and having police with guns in the Resource Center and all the implications of this.
Are they upset enough to change the policy, which is now going into effect?
Well, Robert, I don't know about the internal politics of the Resource Center for Nonviolence at all. I count on them as being one of the centers of peace in Santa Cruz City. They are certainly not the center of peace. They may be the most well-funded and the most celebrity, ones with the most celebrity appearances, but actually, there is the Peace Action Council. I call it Peace Action Council because I'm from LA. It's Peace Action Center. There are other groups that are centers of peace in this town that do work. I don't know their inner politics. I don't know what is fait accompli, what is a done deal, and what is not. But from what I heard at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, it's definitely not a done deal. In fact, I think the police officers, the police department's going to be needing to change its name to Peace Officers Department before they even get much more, because there's no giving, there's no give and take in this contract.
Roxanne, what do you think?
Well, I will tell you that I stopped supporting the Peace Resource Center. I feel that it is fraud to call yourself a Peace Resource Center, to have a bookstore that has books by Gandhi and peaceful resistance, and then have such aggressive, hateful people be affiliated with it. I believe that I've watched Scott Kennedy try and control other council members by fear, by looks, by dirty looks. I've gotten his dirty looks, but you know, it's like some
You're
people.
You're one of Kennedy's Mau Maus?
Well, yeah. Oh gosh, don't get me started. I'm just saying that when you can't get your own way, and I feel like what's happened to Scott particularly is that he feels like all of the public service he's done, all the work he's done, has not really amounted to, he's not getting the appreciation he needs or deserves, and that may be so.
Me neither, man.
But none of us do, that's right. And I just think he's a burnt-out peacenik at this point who's going to get what he wants no matter what. He feels he's paid his dues. I can't support the Peace Resource Center anymore. I don't go to the bookstore, nothing, because I think that by bringing in the DOJ money, they have let the devil in the back door, and it's their demise.
It's funny that you should talk about Scott that way, because I was standing with him inside the city council chambers before the city council meeting last Tuesday at 7 o'clock. I wasn't feeling well. I had a funeral, so I only spoke for a brief period. But before the meeting started, he was there, and he was like trying to make fun of Phil and Jane Baer and whoever else it was.
He always does.
Speaking about their concerns about, you know, tearing down three more lots in order to expand parking lots is a kind of a city, inner city kind of crime zone invitation. Wouldn't this actually bring drug trafficking into it? And I consider that a real sincere and obvious question, but he snickered at it and made fun of it. He said they'll try anything, they're just coming up with any kind of argument. He was trying to get Mike Rochman to come along with this logic, and Mike just sort of yesed him and walked on. He is a panicked, lonely, tragic figure right now, and I think we should send some love to him and some care to him, and he should go on a diet. There's something wrong, and Scott needs to face that. I don't think we need any more. You know, he's generating a lot of fear and hatred in this community. I don't think we need to generate it back. The solutions we need are some very creative solutions to fight the very, very ugly kind of situation we're facing in Beach Flats.
I agree. I think probably Scott's disappointed himself more than he has the rest of us.
Just move closer to
mine. Oh, sorry. If you didn't hear that, I just think Scott's probably more disappointed in himself than, even than we are. I hate to pick on him, I'll be honest. I really hate to pick on him, but I also see that he's held himself up to stand for something that he isn't really living. He's not living it anymore. And I knew Scott when he was young, and he was like one of those best and brightest hopes for the peace movement. And, if I can look back and see him the way he was, he probably also is seeing that he fell short of the mark.
You know, I think as some of us get older, we move on to more conservative positions, and I see that as sort of a natural deformation, if you will, for many of us. And that's, maybe young people or different people have to pick up radical positions in order to, for them to continue. And I don't really hold it against a person that they've changed their position. What bothers me is that such a person is in a position of power holding together a coalition of forces under the label of progressive. That bothers me with Rotkin, that bothers me with Kennedy.
This is the tragedy of the progressive movement in Santa Cruz right now, and I think the answer is common ground. We have to find, whether it be the fight between the liberals and the radicals, whether it be a fight between those who we put in and are now burnt out or have become actual tools of city staff and development staff and bureaucracies, and unwittingly or wittingly become tools. We do have to find common ground, and so in this process of attacking what the Resource Center for Nonviolence has done, I don't think we should say that it's a done deal. I really felt, and I sensed from what I saw Saturday morning there, that the people that work there, the people that are the staff, are saying no, we're not going to have this. If we are going to have it, we want to know what the police officers are going to be doing, and we want to have an equal power in this. So I don't think that it is a done deal, it seems that all of Santa Cruz, all the issues right now are sort of at breaking point issue. We're sort of breaking point stages with development. We're breaking point stages with water usage. We're breaking point stages with the homeless crisis. We're breaking point stages with the use of the Resource Center for Nonviolence as a front for snitches and cops. We're at breaking point level of them closing down our parks at night, so closing down the riverbank without talking to the people that live next to the riverbank, who walk their dogs there, who jog there, not even bothering to even think. And I haven't talked to a single council member that he's even thought that they should have talked to the neighborhoods. That was a neighborhood. That wasn't just where drug dealing. As a matter of fact, the reality is that now that that place is off limits, there is now nothing but drug dealing on the riverbank. And that's a fact. Anybody that lives around there knows that. So we've come to a crux. And it's kind of interesting that it's coming just before the city council candidates start making their announcements. We're going to have a lot of sorting out to do, and I think we have to find what the common ground is, because I hold that even in this town, the massive right wing conspiracy that Hillary Clinton's talking about can take hold, and we better be careful.
You know, I agree with you, but I think that the reason we're at this crux is because it's really a spiritual crisis.
Yeah.
I really think that everything that Santa Cruz has believed itself to hold true and to stand for, that money, you know, the idea that big dollars could maybe come in and save us from our sleepy little cells, is like, it's like letting the devil in. And I really think that that's really it. There's all kinds of grants available from government that causes people to sell out, to take a fascist attitude. It's all, you know, our community is not financially really doing well. And people are worried, and instead of really looking for long-term solutions, they're looking for the quick fix.
But our community is doing well in terms of the businesses, and the downtown association's profits in the past few years have skyrocketed. But in terms of having sustainable wealth in this community, we are really in serious trouble, because when all the creativity that we should have been doing in coming up with alternative and separate and local money and keeping money locally, we have not done. This city council has failed to do that. The last two city councils have failed to do that very seriously. And it's not just the city councils, it's all of us. We have to really be even more imaginative than we could possibly imagine to be. You mentioned the issue with money, and the whole reason why there is a sleeping ban, the whole reason why the homeless are driven to the edge of town and told not to come back, the whole reason why homeless people are kicked off Pacific Avenue is not because of the behavior of some types of homeless people. It's all homeless people being attacked, and it is money. You're right. And it is a spiritual crisis. It's a spiritual crisis.
Are the people going to go downtown that buy those $250,000 homes? Are they going to go downtown if there's people sleeping on the street? We're trying to make this a place for them, not a place for us anymore.
Yeah, that's just it. And also, it's becoming, in terms of protections of our citizens, it's becoming a place for the landlords in Miami and the landlords in Tahoe. You know, these issues have to be addressed, and I don't think they should be addressed like the last election, where the one candidate who was, I was possibly going to be getting the Central Labor Council endorsement. I had gotten, made a very, very wide coalition, and I was speaking very strongly on the rights of the homeless. And I was battered by police officers at the direction of a mayor. And nothing's been done about it. There's no outrage from the community about it. That's the thing that amazes me, even from my own party. People saw me battered. I've been seriously wounded, and not to mention humiliated when I was on the verge of pulling a pretty big coup in terms of coalitions, that I got a phenomenal amount of endorsements, and they saw that coming, and they directed a police riot, and they had me battered and put me out of commission. That's interference with the election. That's a disgrace in some countries. Where's the democracy?
That's why fear is successful.
Yeah, that's why fear is successful.
That's what Scott's feeling.
And I'm not afraid. And I'm not buying it. You have not scared me. You know, you've only made me stronger in my conviction, and I'm suing you.
I mean, fear is really a great motivator, and that's what's making people who previously were very peaceful, that's what makes them feel powerful now. They're getting their power back, but they're doing it by fear.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sad when you feel powerless that's the path you choose.
Well, I don't feel powerless, and I'd like to be a little brazen right now and just put a commercial out for the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban. We're in our push days, so all of you who have petitions, turn them in. If you're carrying petitions, and if you're a student, today and tomorrow is Porter College Day. We're hitting we're going door-to-door at Porter College. If you want to call Creek, call 502-7769. She's courting students while Lisa's out of town. If you want to pick up materials, I'm going to be late at being at Lucky's on the east side of SoCal. I was going to be there at 1:30, so for those of you who are coming to pick up tables and literature and so forth, I'm going to be late because I'm here, and I would like to eat some lunch. But we are on a big push, and also another commercial, Dan Hamburg will be the special surprise guest at the Beach Flats fundraiser, Fire and Brimstone, at the Palookaville next Saturday. So Dan Hamburg, the Green Party gubernatorial candidate, is coming to town to fight for the Beach Flats for us, with us.
Right, and go ahead.
Be there, be square. Show starts at 9 p.m. May 23rd, Saturday night. Brimstone and fire, okay? Don't let us down.
And I remind you that for this very special edition of Bathurst Pierce Broadsides, I persuaded Reckless to allow seepage. So you're going to get continued conversations here. And Alicia will finally get a chance to say something, I hope.
I thought it was only city council members that would call me seepage.
Oh, let me rephrase myself. You'll be able to listen to Roxanne, Akista Pache, her daughter, Alicia Aquistapache. You also hear Neptune from the Beach Flats on Reckless's show upcoming. If you want to catch the official response to this show, hopefully Scott Kennedy has been listening. Scott, you haven't been listening. You're in trouble. You have to come back to me at 6 o'clock on Thursday when Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM will present the Scott Kennedy side of the story. He's going to be my guest at 6 o'clock on Thursday. Let's see, that's May 21st, I believe. Isn't that right? Thursday the 21st? I think so. Yes. Saturday the 23rd. So it's Thursday the 21st at 6 o'clock when we will have hopefully some phone lines heating up, and I think that Scott will have someone in the studio to speak with, because my knowledge of this, though it's growing, is not what it could be. I want to thank you for being with us, and I want to turn the mic over now to Reckless after this brief goodbye. Do tune in Thursday for the Battle of the Titans, Kennedy, Norris, and anybody else who happens to be in the vicinity. Thank you.
The shark has pretty teeth here, and he shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has Mackie here, and he keeps it out of sight. When the shark bites with his teeth here, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves though wears Mackie here, so there's not a trace of red. On the sidewalk Sunday morning lies a body losing life. Someone sneaking round the corner is the someone at the knife. From a tugboat by the river, a cement bag's dropping down. The cement's just for the weight here. Bet your Mackie's back in town. Louis Miller disappeared, dear, after drawing out his cash. And Mackie spends like a sailor. Did our boy do something rash? Suki Tawdry, Jenny Diver, Polly Peachum, Lucy Brown, all the line forms on the right ears. Now that Mackie's back in town. Oh, the shark has
ready. Thank you very much, Robert. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. This is Reckless, and starting here right now, 1:30, you're listening to Fucking It Up in a Fuck Society with Music and Issues for Brainwashed Children. Stay tuned, for at 4 o'clock, we have another, we got some more Utah Phillips. We got another tape, shows 3 and 5, because 4 was a Christmas show, so they didn't send us that one. But yes, at 4 o'clock, we will have Utah Phillips. I got a song going out to Mr. Thomas Van Sterven and William Zeers of the FCC. And I know, you know, they think they're just doing their jobs, but Free Radio Santa Cruz is really the only voice that we have in the community where we can talk about these issues that are hurting our community, or just issues that are helping our community and things that are going on. Newspapers are really good. There's lots of really good newspapers out there. I'm going to be reading from a local newspaper, the Comic News, today. They did a very good, some articles on the Beach Flats situation. But newspapers are one-sided, and you can't, you know, you can write to the editor, but they might not publish it. But here on Free Radio, your voice, you can say whatever the fuck you want, and I'm going to say it like that, and because that's how we feel sometimes. So anyway, this is Reckless. We're going to talk some more with Roxanne and Alicia and Neptune about the flats downtown neighborhood. But I'd first like to put this song out. This is going out to the FCC agents. We love you. Free Radio. Tuned to Free Radio, and we're here with Roxanne talking about the Seaside Company, who owns most of the beach flats down there. And what was I going to say? I saw on the TV actually did do some coverage, and I heard some of the people that were living there saying that they didn't really blame some of the people that owned houses down there for selling them to the Seaside Company because they wanted to. You know, they would rather sell their home and get a big chunk than, you know, be a landlord and get a little bit from the renters. But those, I think those are the people, too, that could have helped, you know, quote-unquote, save the day. And what do you think about that? Do you blame the people that sold their homes to the Seaside Company? Or you don't even really want to place the blame. We just want to figure out what we can do to make it a better situation for the people. A lot of the citizens, like, down there don't even know, don't speak English, don't know what's going on at the meetings, you know. How do you feel about some of those people that...
Yeah, I'm not much into assigning blame. It's really not part of what I'm doing, but the way I feel is that people have tremendous pressures on them, and this pressure on the landlords has been tremendous. They've been painted as being irresponsible, being out-of-town, money-gouging landlords. You know, they have a lot of upkeep. Many of the buildings are, you know, 80 to 150 years old. It takes constant maintenance and upkeep. But what happens is, like, one of the landlords that was forced to sell, you know, his son died. He went through a divorce. And his house was condemned in the beach flats. And, you know, after a while, you can only take so much. You know, you just, I don't blame anyone that sells out. And there's somebody with a wide open pocketbook that says, okay, I'll buy this. You know, I'll solve your problems. I'll just take it off your hands today. And that's the end of the problem. So, no. But the problem for the rest of us that are left is that then the Seaside Company has made great inroads into all of the neighborhoods. They've even made inroads into the conservation neighborhoods now, where the most historical buildings that were supposed to be a conservation neighborhood are. And they're a very poor landlord. I don't consider the Seaside Company a responsible landlord.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really considers that Seaside Company even wants to be a landlord. They really just see the beach flats in Santa Cruz as a place where they can make a whole bunch of money. And they really don't care what happens to the people. That's what I've been getting. So they're talking about doing all these things. They want to build a 125-foot roller coaster. Right now the roller coaster is 70 foot, and it's the original one, and a lot, you know, that's brought people here. But I guess I wanted to talk more about the neighborhood, if Alicia wanted to go ahead and talk now and let us know how it is, like, living in the flats. I lived in Santa Cruz for about 4 years, and I've never been scared walking down in the flats by myself. I've never considered, everybody's like, ooh, it's a bad neighborhood, you know, be careful down there. But, I mean, I've never really felt any threat down there, walking down there at night by myself. And I just want to know more about the beach flats. I was even seeing people down there partying, having a great time, not necessarily, you know, just having their music on and just being kind of family oriented and like barbecues. And, you know, I never really, I don't know. You want to go ahead and talk about living in the beach flats? And
sure. You know, Alicia came to talk because, in some ways, because she's seen the breakup of her neighborhood in the beach flats already, and she's had some of the fallout from it. And actually, part of the breakup of the beach flats is that Alicia is my adopted daughter, and she actually got a chance to know her biological parents for the first time in her life when we moved into the beach flats, because her father lived right across the street from us.
Oh, wow, cool.
And so for her, although it was, it didn't develop into a deep relationship. I think I'd like her to tell you, like, how she feels watching her own biological father now perhaps become homeless. You know, it's people say, oh, well, change. There's always change. Though, you know, people will get along fine, but these are the kind of stories that are full, the beach flats are full of.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, too. It's like they get kicked out, and in other places in Santa Cruz, the rents are so extremely high. That it's hard to find a relocation or find another rent place. I'd like to thank Alicia for being here with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz for her, I'm sure it's probably her first radio interview, so we'll be nice. Thanks for coming on, Alicia. So how has the beach flats, well, how was it to you before, and now how do you see it after you think what they want to do with the redevelopment and everything?
Well, I didn't really just get to know my dad. Also, I got to know, like, my half-sister. I got to know lots of people that I lost touch with or didn't know that were in my family and stuff. Like, I still write to my half-sister who lives in Hawaii now. We still keep in touch and everything. But, it wasn't the same when, like, we got to see each other every day. And it's sort of, weird now that you can't see them, but you can still talk to them.
Right. So, what do you think's gonna, I don't know where you guys live down in the beach flats. Is where you guys live gonna be affected by, well, I mean, the whole town is gonna be affected by the redevelopment. But how do you feel it's going to affect your daily life or your home situation, or even your friends that live in that area? Their home, are people worried about it? Are your friends, like, worried that their parents aren't going to find a new place to live? Or I mean, I don't know how many homes are getting taken down and stuff, but...
Well, our neighborhood really isn't going to be, like, torn down or whatever. But, like, mostly around our neighborhood and stuff, like, the road will go like right past our house, basically.
Right, so there'll be a lot more traffic.
Yeah, and I'm just afraid basically for people who are going to lose their home and not get it back. Might not get a place to live again, because this is basically the cheapest place in Santa Cruz for people to live.
What about the boardwalk? A lot of people, those cars coming in and stuff, and there's I've always, every time I go down to the beach flats, there's people just kind of hanging out on a sunny afternoon, having a little barbecue, doing some family type things, and there's lots of kids out in the street playing and stuff. How do you think the traffic's going to affect the safety of them or?
Well, basically no kids will probably be allowed to play in the streets anymore when this happens, because there'll be more traffic and more people. We have a fence around our yard so our dogs can't get out, and I make sure that they can't get out, and we take them out on the leashes when they go in the car and everything, because they will get killed. We see usually kids not waiting for their parents to cross the street to go to the park and stuff, and it sort of hurts me that they won't basically be able to get to the park anyway.
Right, I've seen some kind of, not necessarily redevelopment, how they're calling it here, but in other towns, going more and more towards a tourist-based industry, where, like was said earlier, they're bringing in 700 low-paying jobs, and, all you can ever hope to be is a busboy or a waiter or, working in a retail store, waiting for tourists to come in. And I've always seen that you bring in low-paying jobs, people are going to go, if they're hungry and they, need money, they're going to go and sell more drugs and beat up more people and take people's money or steal more, because their quality of life just got totally shut down by a city that didn't care about them. And I think people end up feeling not only rejected, but just, they end up not having any, being able to sustain themselves. We need to talk about doing more sustainable redevelopment for people. And I don't know, how else do you feel, what do you think, is anybody else in Neptune, you want to talk about the beach flats area? Alicia, if you have anything more to say.
Yeah, I live in the beach flats, and there's a lot of problems with this plan. It's not just the fact that they're going to be taking housing away, low-cost housing, and under federal rules, even if they build low-cost housing, if they use a dollar of federal money, they can't guarantee the housing to the people that will be displaced. They'll have to be put on a list that are already 5 to 10 years old, so that they'll be way down on the list. They won't be at the top of the list like the government's trying to tell all these people that don't speak English and don't understand what's really being said at these meetings. Most of the Hispanic people in the neighborhood don't even go to the meetings because they come from a country where the government can't be trusted, and they look at the American government and think it's even worse, which in many ways it is. At least in Mexico, they're honest about their dishonesty, whereas here they're
very hypocritical.
You're right, and so I think that's part of the problem, is that there isn't any cohesive structure there to actually guarantee anybody housing that's displaced by this.
Yeah, even if they say that they're going to put up low-income housing still means you need to make at least $30,000 a year or $25,000 a year to even qualify for low-income housing. So what, I think they really need to do is go low-income housing where, there's people that don't make I've never made $25,000 a year, and there's a lot of people there I know by doing $5 an hour jobs, cleaning, washing dishes 8 hours a day, that's not going to pay for rent here in Santa Cruz. And basically I think they just want to kick all the poor people out so the yuppies can have their own little gentrified boardwalk yuppie town with their convention center and their golf centers and their fun rides. And I think it's great if they want to bring more money into Santa Cruz. That's a good thing. But don't forget about the people that are here. And also, I just wanted to tell the people, it's like the only way that any movement has ever changed anything is by people stepping up in some kind of solidarity, not letting our differences divide us further, and just stepping up and telling the city what the, you know, the people out of the flats really want. So I'm glad we could be a platform for that here on Free Radio, but I think it's really important for people that are really going to be affected by this to step up and let the city council know what they think and what's going on with their place. So how have you liked living in the beach flats? Is it okay down there? Or?
Yeah, I've lived in the beach flats at various times in the last 20 years on and off. And the house I live in right now, I've lived there two or three times in the past 10 years. And the neighborhood's actually pretty nice, except in the summer when there's insurmountable amounts of traffic surrounding the neighborhood, and it makes it like the air quality becomes very poor. And it makes it really hard to get in and out of the neighborhood, even on a bicycle or by foot. You know, there's just all these people either racing in or racing out of the neighborhood. And but the house I live in, we don't even lock our doors, you know. I don't even know if they do lock, but it's like the whole notion that beach flats is a crime-ridden area is really sort of a
crock of shit.
It's a bunch of bull, because the statistics that they're showing are for the entire beach area, not just the beach flats, and they don't break down the statistics into the residents of beach flats. How many of them are the people being arrested that they're citing all these numbers to? And I think, you know, if those numbers came out, it would be a much different story. And right now, the city and the county are involved in this program where they're trying to lower the numbers at all of the housing units around town for the crime numbers by not having the residents at these various places call the police. They have them call a private security company.
The Seaside owns that company.
And then when the private security gets there, if something's really out of control that they can't deal with, then they call the police. But this will lower the number of police calls to all these low-income units around town and make them look like they're better than the beach flats. Whereas I know myself, I have friends that live like at the Blaine Street projects, and up until they had these security guards there, the police were there all day, every day, on and off, all the time. And now the security guards are doing that all day long. And I think it's, you know, they're just trying to pull the wool over people's eyes on these crime figures, and they're trying to make other places look better that aren't really better.
Yeah, I think historically, the government and economics concerned have used people's sustainability and the animal sustainability out there in the wild, where they're, it's almost the same thing. I mean, they're cutting down the animals' homes and trying to make money off of that land instead of letting people, letting the animals live. And I think you can kind of correlate the same thing. You know, they've historically used our lives for power and money, and as long as we let them do it, they're going to do it. So I really just want to get out there to everybody that they need to like stand up in solidarity and question this abusive authority that they're trying to use. While we have Roxanne and Alicia here in the station, I just want to ask you guys if you have any other topics you feel you want to talk about, or there's something we missed. I do also have, there was the meeting yesterday. Is there another meeting coming up, or some, maybe get out those phone numbers again of people that are concerned, maybe even in Espanol if anyone speaks Spanish, get something like that out.
You know, the one thing that I really wanted to speak to is my neighborhood, and I really haven't had a chance to do that yet. When I got there 3 years ago, I needed low rent mainly. And so I said to myself, well, if it's really, really bad here, then we'll move. But I need a house right now. The land that I had been on was being developed. And I ended up living happily ever after in the beach flats. I moved into a fully integrated neighborhood. with choreographers, professors, artists, business owners, PhDs who were homeschooling their children. I moved into a neighborhood where a lot of people didn't speak the language also, and it was hard for us to get to know each other. And I also moved into a neighborhood where sometimes people couldn't read and had a lot of barriers to them becoming integrated into the community at all. However, we all got along. And we have very few fusses and feuds between ourselves by any means. I think that if Jane Baer is fond of saying we should be the model. We should be the model, the national model for a fully integrated neighborhood. And I believe that. For whatever reason, we all can live and let live together. And it's odd that everyone outside the community cannot let us do that. They want everyone separated. The Latino families live multi-generationally, and they live intergenerationally with each other. They have grandmas, aunts, uncles. Their children are not in subsidized daycare. Their children are in the bosoms of their families. Some very well-heeled gray-haired gentleman the other day told me he thought that was tragic. He saw that as tragic that they weren't being socialized at, you know, the age of 18 months by a daycare. Well, you know, I don't think that's tragic. And a lot of people don't think that's tragic. And the people that homeschool their children keep them in the bosom of their family. Also, why? Because they love them. Because they can get a better education. It's these very things that annoy our leaders so much that we don't need them. And they need to be needed, I guess. And so all of the social services now are gearing up and standing in line. Because guess what? The Beach Flats area is bucks for them, too. It's bucks up. It's a satellite office that they can get funding for. Because all the people down there are so darn screwed up. I mean, they keep their kids with them. Can you imagine? And their kids go to college at age 14 because they've been homeschooled. They're at Cabrillo taking classes at 14. It is a despicable place. But
I just wanted to say one thing that